Welcome to the LAA Podcast special series dedicated to celebrating the International Association of Law Enforcement Intelligence Analysts, or ILEA's 40th year anniversary. This series will cover a variety of topics, including the history of the association, what current local chapters are doing, the certification, training, the future of the association, and much more. Please join us in congratulating the members of the association, and let's jump into this episode where we can hear from some of the most influential members.
Thank you for joining me. LAA Podcast presents a special series dedicated to the ILEA 40th anniversary. With me today are two very influential people to the association, Rob Fallman and Leo Jacques. Guys, how are we doing?
Great, thank you.
Good, thank you very much.
Rob, will you first introduce yourself and just give a little bit of background? Most people should know you, but just in case they don't.
Okay, thanks, Jason. Well, I spent 35 plus years in law enforcement intelligence, starting in the mid-70s at the Royal Canadian Mounted Police as an intelligence analyst, and stayed through my career with about 10 years seconded outside the organization. But I retired in 2011 as the Director General of the RCMP's Criminal Intelligence Program after 35 years of service. Some career highlights, though. I spent two secondments to Interpol, the International Criminal Police Organization, headquartered in Lyon, France, as the Assistant Director of Interpol, head of their Global Intelligence Program. I've worked in over 30 countries as an advisor in the field of intelligence systems, with the focus being on intelligence governance, doctrine, threat risk assessment. And in particular, I'd like to underline strategic early warning for both intelligence practitioners and executives. So that's one area that I think needs more attention in intelligence, to focus on prevention of crime versus the response after the crime. So we need a better balance there, I believe. That's a bit about my background. One thing I am proud of is on retirement in 2011, I was appointed an Officer of the Order of Merit of Police Forces by the Governor General of Canada. And so the Order of Merit is sort of the centerpiece of Canada's honor system and recognizes lifetime achievements and dedication in your community of service, in this case, the police sector and intelligence.
Very good. All right, Leo, can you match that?
No, not by half. Most of my experience, knowledge of whatever, predated law enforcement from an academic background. I got a job with the Arizona State Legislature, which was like moving from teaching about the Middle Ages to living in the Dark Ages. And then I spent 3 years there writing criminal, all the drafts of bills for crimes and corrections. I wrote part of the state criminal code. And then I left there. My first real juncture with law enforcement was I was hired by the Arizona Drug Control District, and Richie Martinez was on the board, and he was my first boss and also mentor at the beginning of my law enforcement career. I was assigned to organize crime, working an FBI and Drug Control District case against Joe Bonanno, one of the original Mafia Dons. So I did all the analytical work from the beginning to the end of his conviction on that. After 2.5 years, I was placed in the caretaker position as the director of the Rocky Mountain Information Network, which was one of the, at that time, 7 RISP projects. And then I was fired from that. You'll note in most of this that I had a hard time keeping a job. So later, maybe a year later, I was hired by the Arizona Department of Public Safety. Richie Martinez was on that board, and he also became my supervisor for several years. And I stayed there working mostly at the beginning, serial cases, serial rapists, serial killers, kidnappers, and then moved over to the Arizona region of the high-intensity drug trafficking area in the Southwest, and was there from, I think, 1996 till I retired in 2009. And other than that, I've taught history 3 years back east at Merrimack College for 3 years, and for 35 years as adjunct professor for the University of Phoenix in humanities and history. And I think my biggest award was at graduation And one year I was awarded, you know, by the students, the least politically correct student favorite. So that is my top award.
All right. Well, very good. Well, I do want to ask you both about all the roles that you've had with ILEA. So we'll actually start with you, Leo. Could you tell us all the different tasks and roles that you've had with ILEA over the years?
Okay. First of all, I was a member three different times. You've already seen I can't hold a job. So each time I left ILEA. So I was elected as the Bylaws, Ethics, and Elections Director, which I held that position until 2009 when the board was restructured. So I was responsible for writing, drafting bylaws, resolutions, policy manual, and an ethics program, and also ran the elections until 2009. Then I was elected as secretary in 2009, and I was there till 2015. When I retired, and I supervised the awards and elections committee. So I was on the editorial board of the journal, I worked on a certification committee, developed with Lynn McCloskey, who succeeded me as secretary, the current bylaws, policy manual, ethics program, and the elections guide for the committee running the elections. And then since 2016, I've been the ethics committee chair and re-edited the ethics policy and created the appeal process.
Okay. And Rob, how about you?
Well, I've been a serving member continuously since 1981, the 40 years history of the organization. I was founding president of the first Canadian chapter and the first chapter outside of the United States. It formed in 1991, and I was the chapter for 3 years before I was seconded over to Interpol the first time in 1994. I have held a number of board positions. One was on the awards committee group, the other in chapter development. Been executive director. They had non-paid executive directors, sometimes appointed by the president. 1996 to 1999, and then again in 2002 to 2004. Currently a member of the executive advisory board of ILEA and have been since retirement. As an aside too, as a member of the Board of Governors and founding member of the Society of Certified Criminal Analysts, which did form in 1989, then passed on to ILEA as its certification program. And one other aside, I was associate editor of the ILEA Journal from 1994 to 1995. It's just a two-year period.
Okay, good. Well, let's go back in time. 1981, ILEA is just being formed. Robert, take us back and talk about what you experienced as you first get involved with the association, get into what the purpose was, what the goals were, what issues they were trying to solve with the association.
Happy to discuss this point because I think it's a highlight for the association and for our community of intelligence analysts globally, in fact. The 1970s, just to even go back further, the start of intelligence and analysis started in the United Kingdom, really with the Kent Constabulary, mid-70s. And it started then to percolate in the United States and Canada and other parts of Western Europe. At the time, though, it was ad hoc, and there was no association, professional association that was speaking and coming together for our community at large. So the founding of ILEA in 1981 brought together catalyst of new analysts to the tradecraft of law enforcement intelligence analysts. Some of them like Dr. Charles Frost, who happened to be one of the founding members and was my personal mentor in law enforcement intelligence analyst. He was at the time with the Drug Enforcement Administration after his a stint with the Central Intelligence Agency. And Dr. Frost and a small cadre of individuals introduced me to ILEA, and I became a member because I could see the value of it to our community right away because we needed an association to professionalize, I could say professionalize analysis worldwide. and the side of an international association of law enforcement intelligence analysts particularly interests me because crime knows no boundaries. And even though we have transnational crime, all crime also plays itself out locally. So we need membership in a community at the local to regional to national, international levels. And IALEA, the founding members, stepped up to the plate to create the association, which then started to develop the standards in our tradecraft to move it forward, to be able to meet the needs of law enforcement. And also to understand, I think, too, that we needed crime prevention initiatives as well, because there was a continuous response of crime takes place, then investigation takes place. There was never that cadre of analysts who tried to make sense of the data and get a step ahead of the criminals and level the playing field. So the start of IALEA to me in the early 80s was really the move forward to professionalize our association and our community.
So let's concentrate just a little bit on 1981 then for a moment. It's all coming together. What was the sense in the early days as you were coming in there? You've hit on a lot of the highlights as the reasons why it was needed, but what were some initial things that they needed to shore up right away?
Well, 1981 was an exciting time in the sense that intelligence analysis and its development was just starting to gain, I think, a level of appreciation and the value of it in law enforcement. But there was no group that could speak on behalf to, I think, demonstrate to the wider community and bring the community together. So we're speaking with one clear voice as opposed to many voices in the woods or the forest. There had to be a coherence and an ability to create those standards in the tradecraft. I liken it to the United Nations has the ISO, the International Standards Organization. IALEA, at its initial formation, its genesis, became the organization to develop ISO-type standards for law enforcement intelligence analysis. And I think there was enough excitement that then generated the formation of those early chapters, because it's the ground grassroots community that came together to build the organization. It couldn't be done just with a small cadre of individuals, that being international. So, I mean, it did take, in a sense, decades, and now we're in our fourth, moving to the fifth decade, to advance it to the level where now we have some 19 or 20 chapters, and 50% of those chapters are outside of the United States. So you can see the development and the building, and they're represented members in all continents or on the planet. So that needed to be built, and the foundation and the builders of it did come together then to move it forward to where it is today.
And then, Leo, from your perspective, then you come along in the second decade, and just talk a little bit about the purpose and goal of professionalism from when you started.
Well, when I first started, when I was with the Drug Control District with Richie, we had civil analysts. We had two civilian analysts and four sworn analysts. They all were working specific entities, but no one even talked about the collegiality needed among analysts all over the country until it grew into RIMMON. And then my first contact with RIMMON was with Charles Frost when he asked me to try to recruit more members for IALEA from the RIST projects. And then I was just a regular member until 96. But the basic reason is the same reason I enjoyed working at the strike force, was to try to professionalize the analysts, to develop standards for, later became international, but at least locally and nationally, for analytical techniques to increase cooperation, coordination among analysts, and to take advantage of the information, skills, knowledge, experience, expertise of analysts everywhere to help you pursue whatever criminal case you were working on. So those ideas I brought into IALEA when I was a member of the board than when I was just a regular member.
And then, Rob, one of the staples from the very beginning is the annual training conference with IALEA. And that began right back in 1981. Could you go through a little bit the iterations of the conference and maybe some highlights of how you see the importance of the conference?
Certainly. Well, the conference, to me, it's all about that element of bringing community together, the networking to share ideas, tradecraft, whether it be intelligence, techniques, applications, and demonstrate to your colleagues by way of presentation of case material, some of the challenges that we face on the job, and get the feedback and comment from your colleagues across a wide spectrum of the intelligence analytical community. So you're getting a broader understanding and approach and novel and new innovative ideas to move forward with utilizing intelligence in law enforcement to be more successful and, as I said, move a step ahead of the criminal element. The early start was IALEA itself doing smaller conferences. You know, the numbers then, I recall, were less than 100 often at some of the conferences to now we're seeing 600 plus at the conferences on a regular basis, sometimes even up to 800. And that's a tribute, I think, to the community building that's taken place over the years. There's been different iterations too of the annual conference. As I said, it started IALEA itself, then moved with a joint conference joining with the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Some of that was actually interesting in the fact that the police chiefs were all there and they could see and attend the sessions from IALEA was holding to see the value of intelligence analysts in their organizations, because in those early days, those chiefs of police often did not have intelligence units within their organizations. I mean, it helped me significantly in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. I mean, I started in drug law enforcement as an analyst, and we eventually built a national criminal intelligence program of all crime areas. When I retired in the role of director general, there were 1,000 staff members in our office, of which 1/3 of that staff were intelligence analysts. So well over, you know, 300, 350 intel analysts in one organization. Would not have happened without the support of IALEA, the certification program we've mentioned, and the annual training conferences that brought the skill sets and levels of the analysts to new levels. So today, the conference is now held with the law enforcement intelligence units. There's like two streams of training. You have the analytical, the intel analyst stream, and the intelligence officer stream. And it's good, I think, to bring that duality community together, because we have to work together as teams, the intel officers, the collectors, and the analysts, to broaden our understanding of how we best work together and develop our initial or our tradecraft responsibilities within the intelligence process. So, you know, IALEA has been there at each step of the advancement, and it needs to be there in the future.
Leo, do you want to comment on the conference as well?
I think Rob did it pretty deeply, but I've summarized. It seems like for me, the most important things is his idea is community, cooperation, coordination, new future tradecraft, professionalism, and even the social part is crucial when you're away from all the business and talking specifics. You get ideas, new perspectives, new ideas of what you can use to improve your performance, but also to improve your relationship with other analysts and glean information from them.
Yeah. Do either of you have a favorite conference?
Maybe offline. Sacramento.
Sacramento, I was at too. Well, I was particularly proud that we held the conference in Canada, the first one outside of continental United States in 1996. It was a proud moment. Again, we were in a huge group, I think about 150 analysts at the time, but it was a growing period for IALEA to see that the conferences could be held in different venues. There was one in Mexico City that was, I can't remember. I was there. It seems to me there was about 300 plus analysts, intel officers there. So that was another interesting highlight for the association. You know, I enjoyed all of them, to be honest with you. And I have almost the friendship. It's been sort of an extension of my family over the years to attend those conferences, see the people that maybe I haven't seen even for a year, but it feels like you were just with them. You know, it's conversations like we're having, you know, with Leo, and we've kept in touch since we first met. And it was because of ILEA that we came together. And there's, you know, there's other intelligence. I mentioned Dr. Charles Frost and Jennifer Urquhart, Richie Martinez, and, you know, many others, the current board who's there now, Sheila Dorn, Allison McGinnis, and you many different people that you meet, and they become your extended family.
Very good.
Can I add?
Sure.
I lived in Mexico for a year in 1973, so we went back there in 2006. That was an important one for me. Mostly was outside of ILEA, though, traveling and talking to law enforcement people and going to the ruins. But I think now that Rob mentioned it, one of the two or three in Ottawa, I think, is probably either the 1996 one or 2010, I think, were the best for me.
So over the 40 years, ILEA has had several high points. Certification came around in 1995, and then FIAT back in 2001. And then there's been publications, and we just talked about the conference. So Leo, maybe pick one or a couple of those and comment from your perspective why those were such high points for the association.
Well, I think that the certification program is the most significant contribution by ILEA to analysts. In fact, I would think without everything else, ILEA could stand alone just as a certification body for analysts. For me, it's the badge of professionalism as an analyst to go through the process and be certified. It gives you standing, which is very, very significant in the law enforcement community. Sworn personnel managers are impressed by that. And so I would think it's certification is the number one contribution that ILEA has. Not to denigrate any other one, but that one for the professionalism, the career, the growth, development, and improvement of analysts in law enforcement, it's primo.
How about you, Rob?
Yeah, I agree fully with Leo on that. Professional accreditation is the number one, I think, highlight of ILEA's development and its greatest contribution to our community. It gives the analysts a measured status within their organization. And I've even seen many policing agencies provide enhanced classification or pay levels for the analysts once they're certified. It's like any professional association that develops their tradecraft, their profession to a level that is underlying the value they play in their community, their respective communities. And so to me, too, certification and the continued development of certification standards is paramount to the association.
Well, regularly on my podcast, I like to talk about lessons learned. And so I am going to move on to maybe what might be considered the low point for the association. In 1995, there was an election in which there was a lot of controversy with that election, and then the election had to be redone. And so at that point in time, there was a couple of different factions in the association in disagreement. And so, Leo, your history with ethics and part of the election, do you want to just describe what was going on and what happened? And then we can get into the lessons learned and what came out of that election.
Okay, I think the basic issue in the election is that there was individual candidates were running for office, and a large group of analysts didn't like the way the association was going. So he put together a slate of candidates and submitted that for on the ballot as a slate. You vote for one, you vote for all. And the current administration thought that that was a violation of the bylaws. which I wasn't on the board then, but that was running for that position, which it was not. And the ballots were destroyed, which in itself is a significant ethical and legal issue. But it was resolved. A second election was held and the slate became the members of the board. Now, it was a low point, but it was resolved internally without too much external razzmatazz. It was a key point in the turnaround, I think, for the association. It was the beginning of a new era. And what we've already talked about earlier with fiat, certification, et cetera, all of those elements were set into a faster motion starting in June of 1996 at our first meeting, as Rob mentioned, in Ottawa at the Canadian Police Academy. So I think it was the positive out of it is we survived. I don't think there are any hot feelings left, but it set into motion a group of people committed to working together. All the things that we want of an analyst unit and for analysts worldwide is to work in harmony, as Rob mentions, as a community. So I think it was the jumping off point, a major milestone in the development of ILEA, that it was able to survive that crisis, move on, and reach the point we're at now.
Now, were the ballots actually burned? Because I really want to call this section the burning of the ballots.
No, I think they were destroyed. I don't know if they were burned, but they were destroyed. So that probably means ripped up and shredded.
All right. Okay.
But you can call it the burning of the ballots. I think I like that. I'm waiting for the movie.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Rob, do you have anything to comment on that?
Well, yeah, it may well have been the low point of the association. Having said that, the view that Leo just articulated well is that it was the start of what we would call good governance. And to me, governance is at the center of any organization and how it makes decisions, moves forward as a collective community. And there was a decision at that point to keep the organization together and move forward in a much, I think, than stronger and better governed way than it has heretofore had been operating. So even though, if you want to call it the burning of the ballots to the design of the new future, you could probably have a couple of sequel podcasts or movies even produced. But having said that, the move now to have a full strategic plan, paid executive director, and solid reporting relationships for each of the members of the board with guidelines and requirements, ethics advisor, and the position Leo has been in many years. These are hallmarks of an organization that's continuing to grow and move to, one would hope, even a brighter future, because there are still many countries and many analysts who aren't members of a professional intelligence analyst association. And we can only hope that ILEA and its other sister organizations around the globe encourage them to participate and become members, share their experiences, and continue to grow our community to where it can be in the future to be even more effective in crime control and crime prevention.
Okay, good. It's fascinating that ILEA is 40, and what happens almost right in the middle of its 20th anniversary is 9/11, which obviously has its implications to intelligence. If you both could talk about ILEA in terms of 9/11.
Well, I think the staging for post 9/11 role of the analyst was already set up in the 90s by risk projects, the our conferences, ILEA reaching out to increase its membership and provide training and a forum for cooperation coordination. That was already in place before 9/11. And then post 9/11, I'll leave to Rob.
Interesting, Jason, you bring up 9/11 at the 20th anniversary. I remember exactly where I was on the day of September 11th, 2001. I was Interpol headquarters there in charge of their global intelligence program. And it was one of those moments in history that was shocking. One of those moments, too, where the community, the law enforcement community and the responders to the attack had to come together quickly to contain the situation and try to reduce any further attacks if and when they were coming. So I have to say that Ialea played a great role, too, in that. I reached out to many of my colleagues in the United States where, you know, everything was playing out at that point. And that connectivity through the Ialea membership and colleagues was instrumental in getting a closer and much more personal and better understanding from the agencies that were working directly on the attacks that day and for weeks, in fact, months later. So that, I think, to me, just underlined the critical value in crisis situations where professional associations play one of the key roles in the response needed to contain a situation and try to bring some level of assurance to the general population that things are under control and that the threat has been either diminished or contained completely. So that's sort of a personal story that I think is one of the highlights of my membership in Ialea and working with the wider law enforcement community around the planet.
And we're going to do a lot of fast forwarding here due to time, but as we move in to today, as we've moved through the last two decades of where ILE is today, and you both talked a little bit about it post 9/11 and all that, the training, the certification, FIAT, all the publications come into play, and intelligence as a whole is highlighted after 9/11. So when I had Richie Martinez on the podcast, he talked about ILEA moving from what he called a church model to more of a business model, to this idea that the association can make money and doesn't have to rely on so heavily that volunteers, what he called the church model. Recently, Ialea is in the planning process, or I guess the hiring process, I should say, of hiring executive director and getting into more of an admin staff. So, Rob, talk about, from your perspective, that transition, and we're just basically getting from post 9/11 into where Ialea is today.
I really think it's a positive move, not to denigrate going from church to business model. I just focus on a more business-like professional model, which means the assistance of professional staff, in this case, an executive director, to assist in developing and leading an organization that is completely staffed largely by volunteers, except for small administrative support staff, who do an excellent job, by the way, too. And I probably even should underline that value over the years. People like Christy Taylor, who's the office manager, have been phenomenal in responding to my interest, needs, and documentation, publications, and whatnot. But it doesn't mean, though, that we can't move to a more professional business model. It's still a not-for-profit, so they can look at ways of funding, support from associations, organizations that need to be, of course, vetted, that properly associate with law enforcement intelligence needs. But those funds then can go into things like more training and development, additional publications, reach out to grow the chapters and provide funding, seed funding to new chapters in countries and regions that are underrepresented to date. So I just see it as a move forward. And obviously, there has to be protocols and processes in place to ensure that the hiring process is professional and carried out to find the most qualified candidate that's out there. I happen to be one of the members on, maybe that's why I'm positive about it, I'm one of the members on the selection recruitment committee. I was involved in drafting the work description and ensuring that it focused clearly on the development of the organization and running its strategic plan and developing future ones. We will interview the candidates when the call goes out in the next few weeks. I believe the board will review all the documentation that will go into the recruitment strategy and then move from there. We'll start the interviews. we will not select, I will not support a candidate I don't believe is more than qualified to do that position and represent the organization. So that's how I personally see it. And I have strong hopes that that will be carried forward by my colleagues on the committee. There's five of us working directly with the board, and we work well together. And I believe that we will select a highly qualified candidate that will help develop the future of ILEA to where it can be.
Very good. Leo?
I agree with Rob on the staff that we have now. Very, very professional, organized, but overworked. And obviously, we need more admin help.
Last question then, and I'll start with you, Rob. What do you think is next for ILEA?
Well, I hope next will be further development, in, especially in the area of standards and training. That's absolutely essential to meet the requirements of a rapidly changing criminal environment as well. So whether it be in the area of cybercrime, that really is the crimes we've seen before, but in a much more sophisticated technological environment, to train and develop those who need to have those skills and knowledge sets, ILEA should play a significant role there. Also, in the domain of recruitment for new chapters as well, this is an area that really needs to be enhanced. And I believe with the new executive director and the guidance through this strategic plan that we can be much more representative of our larger community. I think there's at least, you know, we're talking tens of thousands of people who are analysts out there, and we only have a small fraction of that as the membership. And there could be two linkages with the other professional associations, stronger linkages, whether it be the International Association of Crime Analysts based out of the US, the Association of Crime Intelligence Analysts now in the United Kingdom, or the Australian Association of Professional Intelligence Analysts. All of them have a role to play. And we need to link up more closely, ILEA, with those associations, run joint training development conferences, share publications and research material, and support our community, because many of the cases that we're all going to be working on span boundaries and borders around the planet. And we need the support and development from the association to be able to link up quickly to a trusted community. And I think that's the key part, to know the individuals, trust them to share the kind of sensitive information that we have on case studies and cases, ongoing cases that are significant. And we need to be able to come together more than even, unfortunately, with the pandemic. There hasn't been a conference over the last 2 years for ILEA. They're scheduled back into for 2022. And those are wonderful opportunities to meet your colleagues and share ideas and work on cases. I mean, I have many individual stories where ILEA individual members in different parts of the planet have helped me specifically on specific cases that were invaluable. And I see a role for ILEA to play in building and fostering that environment into the future.
And Leo, I'm giving you the last word. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I agree with Rob on most of it, and I will stress the growth of certification. I think we have over 600 certificates right now. I think we're crowding 3,000 members, which I think is fabulous, especially now. I would like to see a little bit more assistance provided to analysts in developing countries. I'm not too sure what that means, but Rob and Warren Sweeney and I think, instituted the program for cutting the dues way, way back, the dues from $50 to $10 for analysts in developing countries. And I think that's working pretty well. But the majority of the members are in the Western Hemisphere, very weak in the Eastern Hemisphere. But the linkages with all these other organizations in Australia, the UK, et cetera, that really counts, I think, as membership among analysts, even though they're not members of ILEA, they are members of the community that we're all working together on. And I agree with them that we need to emphasize over and over again and stress standards and training. And I think one other thing we need is more training for managers. I know in all the positions I've held in law enforcement. I've been supervised by a law enforcement agency, and that rankled the whole time that a sergeant who could become and gone in 12 days or a year or 2 months was managing professional civilian employees. So I think there are places out there that are working on training managers, but they train so fast in the sworn ranks as opposed to civilian managers would seem to stay a longer period of time, but that's essential.
Well, Rob, Leo, I appreciate you being on the show here discussing the history of ILEA as part of the 40th anniversary episode. Thank you so much for being here, and you both be safe.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks very much, Jason. Stay safe too.
And if I swore, cut it out.
Thank you for making it to the end of this episode. We'd like to thank ILEA for the opportunity to work with them on this special series and our listeners for your continual support. Please check out our other work at leapodcast.com, and we'll see you in the next episode.